This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we are talking to one of the greats, favorite Dreamland guest, a favorite guest of mine and friend of mine, Grant Cameron, is back with us. He's a leading researcher and author in the field of UFOs, government disclosure, and this is where we're going to be concentrating today, the intersection of consciousness and non-human intelligence. He has been doing this for a long time, just like me, over 40 years. His last visit to us was for his amazing book, UFO Sky Pilots. Do you remember, if you are a close encounter witness, actually flying a UFO? Do you think you might? Well, take a look at this book, because a lot of people remember it, and they remember putting their hands on something and their souls flowing out into the skin of the ship. And some of you also remember, as you approached such a device, it felt like something alive. Now, we're going to go deeper down that path today into new realms of consciousness and the relationship between us, non-human intelligence, and even deeper, more mysterious things. Grant, welcome to Dreamland.
Well, thank you, Whitley. It's an honor to be on, and it's always good to talk to you because you're one of the people who sort of understands what's going on. A lot of I think the UFO community is now sort of lost in chasing sightings and stuff like that, and they sort of missed the boat as to what may be actually going on.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, when you do a show about sightings, I mean, who cares if some guy comes along and calls up UFOs and makes video of them? John Martin does that every night. Melinda Leslie takes tours out to do that every night in Sedona. And so it's not a big deal, but the public doesn't know that. So when someone goes on TV or on YouTube and says, I can conjure up UFOs, here's my video of the orbs I've conjured up, they feel like it's a big deal. It's not a big deal, as most of our listeners know and viewers know. It's something that everybody's in our world, in the experience and close encounter world, have been doing for years. But we need to go beyond that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's fine. Conjure them up, look at them, and then they go away. And so what? What more is there? And that's why Grant's here today. The supernatural unraveling of ultimate reality. His new book is called The Big Game, The Supernatural Unraveling of Ultimate Reality. We're going to do some unraveling today, Grant. And let's start by what to you is paranormal phenomena? It's a big question, and believe me, we're going to drill down into some profound mysteries in a minute. But let's just start at the basis, because your idea of what this is very developed.
Yeah. Well, basically, this book came from an idea where I was going to call it the Super Bowl, because if you understand what's going on, you realize this is like the Super Bowl of all stories. This is the biggest story of all times. And someone said, well, you're going to get sued, so that's why we called it the big game. But what I was looking at when it comes to paranormal phenomena, you know that it's not just UFO. So you see a UFO, yeah, okay, fine. It's to me, it's the phenomena is basically waking you up. And then you have to accept, okay, this is for real. Now what's really going on? And that's how it started for me in 1975, where I saw it and I went, wow, I mean, there are miracles. This stuff's for real. And it was came so close. And yet I said to myself, well, but what's going on? Like, well, what's this thing really there? And the more I've gone through the 50 years I've worked on it, the more I realized that it's much more non-physical than people realize. It's not what you think it is. And I guess the Bottom line comes down, I always re reference Jim Semivan, who's the equivalent of a two-star general at the at this former at the CIA, very high-level guy, and he got the briefing. He got the actual read in to the program, and he talks about this seminar briefing that he got that when he walked away, they said, "Do you want another briefing?" He said, "No, I've seen enough. I don't want to hear any more." And basically, he was asked, "Well, did they discover anything?" And he said, "Yeah, these guys who had high-level clearances like him, from contractors and scientists and stuff, scared the living daylights out of him. Well, it can't be ETs are here from Mars. That's not going to." And he said he walked around for 3 months, and he was in a daze. And his wife was asking him, "Are you okay?" And basically, I remember my assistant Desta Barnaby, who wrote this book with me. She talked about the first time she read The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, and this idea that the world may not be what you think it is, and this whole idea. And Jim Semivan, when they asked him, "What did they discover? What did they discover? Anything about UFOs?" He said, "No, nothing." And he said, "I'll bet a year's salary that they have no clue what's going on." He said, "Well, what was it?" He said, "All the psi stuff is real." And that's this whole idea that the world may not be what you think it is, this idea that it may be as one of the top physicists, Richard Feynman, said, this idea that it's all fields, it's all just vibration, and there may not be any time and space. That's what blows you away, that you realize, like, oh my goodness, that you're looking at fields, and you're looking at the fact that time and space and all this kind of stuff doesn't exist, and your whole world sort of falls apart, that everything you believe sort of falls into this sort of trap. So the paranormal phenomena would be anything that falls outside the bell curve. So you have the bell curve, and that's what Gary Nolan said. "I'm not interested in the 95% that fall inside the bell curve. I'm interested in the 5% that are outside, the paranormal phenomena." When you see a paranormal phenomena, what it's to tell you is what you believe, it may not be right. It may be beyond what you believe, the things that are para or beyond the normal stuff. And that's when you start to discover stuff and you start to learn. And basically, it comes down to this idea that there may not be a physical world, and that it's all vibration. And the one I was just looking at that did would just blow you away is you have this idea that there are physical particles. So if you go into any AI and you say, "What is primary in the Big Bang? Is it particles or is it fields?" And every AI will say, "No, it's fields." And if you take all the particles, and I went through AI and I checked this, if you take all what we think are particles, which are actually just electrons, are just vibrations inside a vibrating field inside a vibrating field. If you take all the electrons, the protons, and you squish them all down and into one thing, what you have is an object the size of a big building. The rest of the universe is all space. And that's the kind of stuff that sort of blows people away. You go, like, what are you talking about? That everything is space, and what you're seeing is not what you think you're seeing. And it just, the paranormal phenomena, that's what they're trying to do, I believe. This phenomena, whatever it is trying to teach you that the world is not the way you think it is. It's not as physical as you think it is. It is not as time related as you think it is. And you've got to revisit the whole thing. And that's what the paranormal phenomena does. And what we did in this book is just look at all this paranormal phenomena piece by piece. And you start to realize, like, wow, I didn't know this was going on. I didn't know that was going on. And the people that are in the field sort of realize it because they have all sorts of phenomena going on. Like an experiencer, if you ask them, "Have you got any paranormal phenomena happening in your house?" They'll say, "Oh, I live in a haunted house." That's Jim Semivan. "Oh, I live in a haunted house. All this stuff's happening, and there's
Me
orbs
too.
flying around." And that's what I was. The book was originally be called Crossovers, because I started to realize that there was all these crossovers, that all these things were being paralleled. And the one example I can show, and then you can ask your next question, that I asked you about, when the people are on board the ship. Jim Semivan talked about this. They asked him, "Was there any telepathy?" And he said, "Yeah, that was the weirdest thing." He said there was this being behind me. He said, and it had this guardian type thing going on about it. And as soon as he said that, I said, "Guardian type thing? That's Michael Newton. That's the soul guide stands on your left side behind you, and maybe that's a soul guide." He says, "This guardian type thing going on behind him," and he couldn't look. And then I remember there was a U.S. Air Force colonel in that was flying the ship, and he said, "I was on the board the craft. he said there was somebody behind me and I couldn't look. I don't know if it was aliens or it was humans, but they were telling me what to do. And then I asked you, I said, Whitley, you're on the ship. Did you ever have anybody behind you? You couldn't look and they were behind you and they were telling you what to do or they were interacting. You said all the time. And you start to realize, hey, there's this pattern that if you look at the pattern, you start to realize something else is going on. They're giving you these little hints and clues. And there's all these crossovers, but if I called the book crossovers, nobody would know what I was talking about. But when you look at the paranormal phenomena, you see all these crossovers that people are having, not one paranormal phenomena, they're having all sorts of paranormal phenomena, and it perhaps is all the same thing.
Well, that's very interesting, and you call this the big game, and I remember, by the way, Jim, of course, is a friend, and remember myself being on a UFO. I have one pretty clear memory of this, and there was someone behind me too, only they weren't giving me any instructions. I didn't know that there was anyone there, and it occurred to me, I was sitting beside the pilot, who was a human being, and wouldn't look at me. Every time I tried to look at him, he turned away until we were finally like all twisted because I was trying to see his face and he didn't want to let me see it. And I thought to myself, gee, I'd like to steal this thing. And I heard from behind me this, ha, ha, ha. And I thought, oh boy, I'm not sure I'm going to turn around. But it was such a brief flight, it only took a few seconds. I went all the way from upstate New York to Boulder, Colorado, in just a matter of seconds. But it was, I agree with the others that what Jim said, there is a sense of something behind you, someone behind you for sure. And you have to wonder what this is all really about. Was I actually sitting in a physical craft or not? I don't know the answer to that question. But the big game and the basic concept of consciousness, this is the wheelhouse. Because when we're talking about consciousness, we are talking about UFOs, non-human intelligence, human intelligence, and the whole structure of reality. The world that is around you and I, folks, right now, is partly consciousness. It's a construction. You tell us a little bit about your exploration of consciousness. And how it relates to reality. What is it?
Yeah, well, people think that consciousness is like the idea that it's a material world and God created the material world and then he put consciousness into us. And almost all quantum physics now concedes, even before World War II, where we sort of went off the path, all physicists were idealists. They believed that consciousness was primary. And then we came into World War II and we realized we could, separate the atom and stuff like that. We started building bombs and it was like we're using quantum physics to build stuff. But the idea of consciousness is that everything, it's all consciousness. It's all, that's all there is. Consciousness is primary and matter is the secondary thing. So we're, according to a lot of people, the idea is if there's no time and space, then how big is the universe? Or the biblical thing, the kingdom of God is within you. Or out-of-body experience people saying you go within yourself. Or when you're doing a remote viewing, you're going within yourself, that you're tapping into this consciousness that is everywhere, which is one of the things that you sort of realize when you do experience your research, is you realize that 40% of the experiencers at one point during their experience said they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And you get the same thing with near-death experience people, say they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And you get it with shared near-death experience. Some famous people have had that experience. And that's the sort of the concept where you start to see consciousness as different, where everything is in the field, that the consciousness is everywhere and consciousness is creating the world. So you and I, through our actions, are creating consciousness. We're unraveling the universe and building the universe, and is done through thought. And that's where this idea where you can be walking around for 3 months with your head in a daze, if suddenly these high-level officials come and tell you this is actually real, this is the way we're building it, that consciousness is primary, everything's made out of consciousness, and there is really no physical world, that it's this complete flipping the whole thing around. And that's what you see in the paranormal phenomena, is you see this idea that people will say, for example, you ask somebody, have you ever had a near-death experience? 37%, yeah, oh yeah, I've had a near-death experience. 80% have had an out-of-body experience. And a lot of them will have this question, like you have this question, are you on a ship or are you having an out-of-body experience? And the whole thing, everything gets all twisted around until you realize that consciousness is primary. Then you start seeing everything in a totally different perspective, that how can you put people through walls? Well, if everything is space and it's all fields, well, if you understand how the fields work, it's much easier to understand. And that's the problem we have with paranormal phenomena, is it interferes with the physical worldview, that everything is solid and everything is non-conscious and stuff like that. When you get into consciousness, you realize that everything is conscious, everything is alive, everything is one. Or the Tao Te Ching sums it up. The Tao, what's happened in science is we've turned everything into a noun. The Tao Te Ching, the first line of the Tao Te Ching says, the Tao that can be named is not the Tao. So if you name it, it's not real.
Yeah,
You're
the
putting a name
name
on it.
pushes in a
Everything's
way.
alive. Everything's a verb. And we're not science. We changed everything to nouns, which are non-conscious, non, you know, they don't have any consciousness. They're not connected and they're not alive. And we've made it into just objects that are floating around and don't have anything. But if you realize everything's conscious, everything's alive, conscious, and connected to one thing. There's only one thing. And that's just throws the whole worldview off. And I've actually started now using the word nature of reality rather than consciousness, because you'll see if you do consciousness interviews, your numbers drop right off the cliff. Because people don't want, they think they've got to go back to church or something. Like consciousness is like spirituality, but it's the nature of reality. If you understand the nature of reality, you realize it is this consciousness thing, that consciousness is primary. And all the major physicists of the early 20th century believe that.
But we're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, I don't want my numbers to drop off a cliff. So we're going to be talking about some really extraordinary things about the nature of the material world and the nature of the close encounter experience. What happens? And I have a quite an interesting story to tell about somebody being pulled up through a roof. We'll be right back with Grant Cameron. Grant Cameron's new book, The Big Game, The Supernatural Unraveling of Ultimate Reality. Also, there's a companion volume, The Big Game, The Paranormal Blueprint. Extraordinary, powerful new concepts throughout this whole effort. His website is presidentialufo.org. That's presidentialufo.org. You mentioned this issue of the material world, Grant, when we were just about to leave the air and moving through walls. And it occurred to me that a couple of months ago, a friend of mine who was working on a project with me, her what she was doing became of interest to the Greys. And one of them showed up at her house with the usual little guardians with it and so forth. And she ended up having something grab her wrist in the middle of the night and pull her up through the ceiling and through the roof of her house. And then she's got missing time for 2 hours. She ended up in a heap on the floor of the bedroom, under a bunch of her clothes. And this is so common. This happens all the time. And where is the shadow line between physical and non-physical there? Because what happened to her was physical. There were marks in her apartment. You could this it was a physical experience. The being that came with guardians. And I would even venture to say I know this being because I've been or they may have many duplicate bodies. I don't know. But it comes with these small beings that rush around making snorting noises. And it sounds sort of funny, but it's actually quite scary, the sound. It's very scary. So where do we get off here? How what is the physical world in relation to all of this?
Yeah, well, that's the big question we're starting to unravel, is how physical are the experiences that we're having in terms of marks and stuff. And you'll see, even if you go back to, with where people are casting out devils and with exorcisms where the marks will appear on the body and stuff like that. That's where the thing is. It all ties together where you start to see that there's a stuff out there. And I think a lot of what they're doing is they're just trying to wake us up to realize that it's not the world we think it is. And sometimes the wake up call is a little more aggressive than other times, and it's reflective. So if you go back to, I always say that the phenomena will be reflective of your fear. When I was doing the 27 psilocybin experiences, I was always in fear when I went in, and I had five or six very dramatic, terrible experiences that, and the others
Oh, well, wait a
were
minute. Back up here. We want to know more about those.
Well, this is the thing. So I go in, and I'm always very afraid to do it because you're going to lose control and stuff like that. And I was in an experience where it was I was sitting there, and there was these objects coming at me, and they were like little BBs, and they were making these whistling noise, and they were going past me, and I was trying to stop it. I was trying to stop it, and I was calling for to stop whatever. And then I suddenly said, "Okay, this is it. This is hell. This is the way I'm going to live forever." And it was a surrender thing. Okay, I took the drug. I got nobody else to blame but myself. This is the way it's going to be forever. And as soon as I said, "That's it," it was boom, I was gone. And the experience was over. And I was in sort of a very blissful state or whatever. And so I said, "Okay, the next time they do this to me, I'm just going to say I surrender and I'm going to get out of it." And then, so they did it again. And they make you forget. They make you forget what happened the first time. And again, I said, "Okay, this is hell. I'm going to live in this for forever." And I just gave up, and the experience was over. So I say it's reflective of you take it into your experience, the fear thing, or you take in your ideas. So if you look back at the Vilas Boas case, people will talk about abductions, and I would say, well, before Nancy Tremaine, who was before Betty and Barney Hill, there was really no abduction type stuff that there is with the Greys and stuff. And they say, well, Vilas Boas. So if you go back to the 56 case with Vilas Boas, you see that he's describing inside the craft. He said inside the craft there was fluorescent lights. And there was square lights inside the craft. And now we talk about the fact that inside the craft, there's no 45-degree angles. Everything's curved. So what you see is, if you go back to 1897, the beings that were seen then, the experiences there are completely different than they are now. And the phenomena is reflective of what we believe as we go along, and that we're inputting it, whatever comes in. Like Barbra Streisand's stepson told me, that he was told, he's a full-blown experiencer. He was told that when they come in, they told him, when we come in, we go into your head and we see what's in your head. And it is with that we build a lesson. We have no other choice but to use what's in your head." So we experience different things, and the world changes, the experiences change. The experiences are not the same now as they were in 1975 or 1955 or 1935. You can see a reflection of the culture in the experiences that we're having. So that's where the thing is, that we are a big part of the experience. We think that there's something out there doing it to us, when in fact it may be our higher self. That there may not be any, as Jim Semivan says, there does not appear to be any there. And I always say to people, "Okay, what is he referring to? There does not appear to be any there. It's this sort of weirdness of how much are we a part of the experience? Are we shaping the experience that we're having? Are we giving ourselves lesson? Is it our higher self that's doing it? Or is there something outside of ourselves?" And if you take a look at the oneness principle, there is no out there. There is nothing beyond the one. It's the idea that if I say, I'm the divine, and Whitley Strieber is not the divine, as the channelers will say, that's nothing more than the shadow pretending to be the light, that
Well,
we are
I'm not
everything.
surprised that Whitley Strieber isn't the divine, but go ahead.
Yeah. So this is the thing. It's this weird consciousness thing where we don't realize what consciousness is. But if you go back to this idealist idea that Max Planck says, nothing gets behind consciousness. You've got to start with the idea that everything is these fields and this vibration, and that we are building the universe. So God did not create the heaven and the earth. God created the sparks and the divine, and we are creating the heavens and the earth with our thoughts. That's what we're doing. And we can have negative thoughts, positive thoughts, or you can even take take the, how you can see how the United States has changed in 10 years and whether you see it as good or bad. You take a look at the United States in 2015 and 2025, it's a completely different country. And all that happened was a couple of people have different thoughts, and those thoughts multiplied and multiplied, and
Right.
the whole thing has changed. And you can see how things change, that we are not the same country we were 100 years ago or 500 years ago, that things evolve.
I keep getting back to the physical issue,
Yeah.
and the reason being that, I have had many physical experiences with the visitors, including the one in 1985, in which I was raped, and which the injury is giving me trouble again right now in the past few days. And I had that injury all those years ago, and it's still painful. I probably have to go back to the doctor. After all these years, there could not be anything more physical than that.
Well, if
So,
you take, but if you take a look at
this.
hypnosis, they used to do these experiments with hypnosis where you would they would say, okay, I'm burning you with a cigarette, and this and the burn would appear on your arm, and it was all done with the mind. This is this idea, how much is the mind in a part of this experience?
Well, that's the question. And, it to me, there is a physical side to this. And that's what I see. And I've talked to Jim about this same thing. And I think what that, and this is reflects in my books, I think that there is something that can kind of concentrate itself into physical form. The
Yeah, oh,
grays,
exactly.
for example. They're not necessarily even from the physical world, but when they come into it, and I've walked the streets with one of them, and in San Antonio back in the late 90s, and the whole world looked different side by side. It was absolutely incredible, and it was my world. I could see the same buildings, the same trees, the same on my w street, but there were a lot of things that when I was near this individual, I saw that mysterious things, these big dark objects that were there, that and strange little things running around on the walls that I don't normally see. And I thought to myself, I'm like a little creature that lives in a burrow, like a little chipmunk that lives underground. And I think my burrow is just great. But now I'm seeing my burrow through the eyes of someone with maybe a broader vision, a greater understanding. And my burrow doesn't look so great. The houses are all twisted. There's all kinds of these strange creatures all around. But still, it's a physical thing. It was a very physical thing. We went out and we picked pecans. Hey, how more physical can you get?
Well, they can make the physical, like the experiment I would basically point out to you is Leslie Kane's story. When I got to interview Leslie Kane, I only wanted to ask her one question. I said, "Leslie, did you see the hand? Did you actually touch the hand?" She said, "Yeah." And the story was, yeah, she was there in a physical seance with Stuart Alexander. He's in the box, tied up in the box, and she's sitting at a table. She said this happened four or five times, a number of times she's seen this, where she's sitting at a table. There's a red light under the table, and this ectoplasm starts coming up on the table, and this hand starts to appear, and it forms into this hand, and it's this hand of a guy, and he's talking. He's 100 years ago, and this is my hand, touch my hand. And I said, "Leslie, did you feel a hand?" She said, "Yeah, I felt the hand. It was physical. It was warm. It was like a child's hand. It was very soft. I could feel the knuckles and the tendons." And the thing banged on the table twice, and then it went blah, 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 back into the ectoplasm. So, what is that? An extraterrestrial hand? It's coming from that world that is made out of fields and consciousness, and it can it create physical things. So, yes, we have crafts, we have bodies, and it can come into the physical world, take on a physical form, but it can go back into the world that it came from. And as they pointed out to Yossi Ronan, who is the Israeli experiencer, they said, "When we come into your world, we take on a body. We don't need to, but we have to take on a body to work in your world. You can do the same thing, you just don't know it." And it's that principle that we can make things appear, we can make things disappear with our minds, and we think that we're stuck in this physical world and we can't do anything. We're very limited by our belief system that we were taught in school. And as Descartes said, when he talked about the starting the he had the dream when he created the scientific method. He said, he talked about skepticism, and he said it was a skepticism of new things. It was skepticism of the old things. He said, I may have to throw out everything I've ever learned. And that's where we are in the phys in the UFO world, is what this thing is doing is making us throw all this stuff out that we believe that there's this, there's this, there's this. And they're saying, no, that's not how it works. And they're doing these things that look paranormal, that they appear, they disappear, they make hands appear, and full body apparitions and stuff like that, that people can touch, and they're actually physical and real. They can do that, but it's they know how to build it in the physical world. And when you leave, as Anne said to you, I'm no longer Anne, but I'll always be Anne to you. We are the player. We are the guys writing the play, and we have this puppet, and we get tied up with the puppet, that we think that we're the puppet on the stage when we're not. We're the play actor. And when we leave, we're not even going to remember this life. When we get to our next life, we're going to completely forget this life, that it's like playing a video game. And that's where you start to get a lot of physicists talking about this computer simulation thing, that we may be in a simulation. It's the same idea, except it's a consciousness thing, it's not what we think it is, not this physical world. That we can make it physical, but there is this higher levels of stuff that is not really physical. The more we get up into the upper realms, the closer we get to source or whatever it is, the less physical it becomes. And
We're going to
you
take
even
another, Grant, we come up on break time, so we're going to take another break. When we get back, I'm going to ask Grant about hybrids and what they are and how they relate to this question of physical versus non-physical. We'll be right back. We're talking to Grant Cameron, the big game, the supernatural unraveling of ultimate reality. There's an unraveling of a lot of things going on in this world now, not just ultimate reality, but everything. We're all unraveling for sure. And his website is Presidential UFOs. What is it? PresidentialUFOs.org?
dot org.
Yeah. And I have had direct physical contact with a number of people who were, if they weren't hybrids, they were designed people and they weren't well designed, because they were fluently telepathic. They were unvoiced. They couldn't talk. They could just grunt. They were very autistic to the point they couldn't look you in the eye. They were agonized by looking into a person's eyes. And they were, one of them followed me all the way from the cabin in upstate New York down to Texas when we lost the cabin and left. And subsequently, I've had interactions with them on not frequently, but enough over the past 20 years or so, 25 years, to know they're real and they are there. And I might add, they don't like us very much. At least they don't like me very much. And what are they, do you think? How do they relate to all of this? Okay.
Yeah,
Maybe
that's
it's
one
not
thing
an
that,
answerable question, but I want you to speculate.
that you can only speculate, because that's one of the things they seem to be keeping very secret, as to, like, do these hybrids live on the ship? Are we populating another planet? Which they may be doing, and we say, well, this is terrible. And yet, when people get the idea we were populated on this planet, we say that's good. But if just suddenly we get involved and we're populating another planet, then it's we don't see it as good. But you see, again, it's certain percentage of the UFO community have that. But if you go to the Mission Rama people, you don't see this kind of stuff. You don't see hybrids. You don't see grays. You don't see reptilians. You don't see mantids. And I said, I defy anybody. 25,000 Mission Rama people who are having all sorts of encounters. Theirs are like biblical. They're all very, religious, Roman Catholic, Latino people, and their beings are like either beings of light, or beings that look like they popped right out of the Bible. They got the muscular, and they got the suits on, and they got the long blonde hair and the blue eyes and stuff like that. And you see this reflective nature, that it's some sort of program that's being run on certain people, but it's not the program all over the place. It's like cattle mutilations only happen in Christian countries. They don't happen to Brahmin cows, and you start seeing all these patterns. And that's what we had this thing with the crossovers, is you start seeing these weird patterns of things that seem to cross over from one to the other, and yet you get the separation when you get different types of people and their experiences, that you do have this hybrid thing that seems to be going on, but you also have this thing with the guys in the robes doing their thing. And to me, it may just be lessons. It's things that people decided, like in grade one, where you're on another planet and you want to make contact with the Earth, and you say the Earth is going off the cliff. They're off. What should we do? And the grade one class says, well, let's send UFOs. Let's put lights on crafts and fly them around. And the grade two class says, oh, let's make crop circles. And the grade three class says, oh, let's do cattle mutilations. And you may have these different ideas that people have to try to get us to wake up and to see that the world is not the way we think it is, because it does. It rattles your whole world, and that's the I think what the bottom line is. They got to shake you up. As long as everything's the same, everybody's going to continue to believe. But when you get a experience that rattles you and sets you thinking, like when you even when I saw the UFO, I 50 years today, I can remember exactly how it happened, because it just blew me away. I went like, I can't believe this is actually happening, and it
Yeah,
just.
but tell us a little bit about that. Go back to that period, and you were activated, like I was activated,
Oh,
and
absolutely.
everyone was activated. Linda was activated. We were all activated, and
Yeah.
people are still being activated today when they see something impossible or have an incredible, totally impossible experience. It changes them completely. I know people who have had that happen just in the past few months,
Yeah, I think
and.
it's this idea of that what they're trying to do is they're trying to cause awe and curiosity. Because until there's awe and curiosity, there's no scientific investigation. You're not going to put any money into anything. But when something happens to you, you can't let it go. And 75 was a big year. I got activated in 75. Linda Howe, her brother phoned her up and said, Linda, there's UFOs over the Malmstrom missile silos. And Bud Hopkins had his 1975 experience, which was a classic sort of experience of a lesson, where he has this. It's in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the object comes in behind the guy's car, and he's waiting for the guy to go around me, go around me. But and the thing goes up above the car, and it lands in the park, and then these robots come out like little robots, and they come out with the little bag and a shovel, and it's like, come on, a bag and a shovel, and each of them has a bag and a shovel, and takes a scoop of dirt. And they go doo, 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 like little robots back into the craft and fly away. And this is the guy, you know, that's Bud at the corner liquor store, tells Bud this story. Bud goes and looks in the park and sees the 10 holes. And he's in 75, he's down the rabbit hole. And Travis Walton gets abducted in 75. The first near-death experience book is in 75. So what happened to me is I was raised sort of very religious. I was supposed to be a minister. And so I sort of had this always a concept of where do we come from, where are we going, all that kind of stuff. And I believe there was miracles in the Bible, but there's no miracles anymore. I mean, that was a biblical thing. And so when the experience happened, they were having sightings, and I had no interest in UFOs. And so I said to my friend, well, we're not doing anything in the city. Let's go out. It's only 35 miles. Let's go see what everybody's looking at. And we didn't go because nobody had any interest. And 3 months later, someone filmed this thing jumping off the ground, which was an event that I am absolutely assured now was made to make me go out there a second time. And I went out. And I remember we drove around for an hour, and he said, "Yeah, there's nothing. We'll drive into the town one more time. If we don't see anything, let's go home." I said, "Great. This has been a total waste of time." We turned the car to go around, and the thing came from the left to the right. It was bobbing up and down. It was red. It was plasma. It looked like it was alive. It flew right in front of the car, and I went, "Oh my goodness, there are miracles!" I went, "Wow!" I was blown away. I dragged all my friends out 2 nights later, and they left. They said, "Oh, we're going back to Winnipeg. We're hungry. We're going for pizza." I said, "No, you got to see this. It changed your life." And the second night, it came right at me, flew right at us, and it was jumping around the sky. And this girl couldn't see it, and she was crying. And some guy had a camera going. It was like a football game. And then it flew away. And I remember it was just flying away. I went, hey, that is so cool. And it's the whole thing about UFO sightings. It's like it changed my life, but it's like, what's it doing? And if you ask anybody who has a UFO sighting, say, what was it doing? And they go, it wasn't doing anything. It was just there. And he said, do you think it wanted you to see it? Yeah, I think so. And everybody has the same impression. And it's just to wake you up that they aren't doing anything. They're not landing and picking up people or anything. They're just flying by, and they're trying to rattle your world and get you to go, what the heck was that thing? And everybody will remember a real dramatic sighting, and they'll remember it like it happened yesterday. And that's what they're doing. They're causing awe and curiosity to get you to investigate, because until there's awe and curiosity, nothing's going to happen.
Well, that's very true, and you have to want something to happen. You have to be curious, and in the case of the government, you know, they see these things flying around and they think, "Whoa, we need that."
Oh, yeah.
And so a whole huge secret industry sucking cash like nobody's business grows up, and now they're afraid because they haven't gotten all that far with it. They don't want anyone to know how much money they've spent, so they're frantically trying to keep it all a secret. Now let's go back to Jim Semivan, and I've talked to Jim on my show, but he didn't get as deeply into his direct encounter as he did with you, apparently. And did you say that he's actually been aboard a UFO or not?
Oh, he doesn't know. No, he just has his experience. He won't talk about it because he said they're still investigating the experience. And I just watched all his interviews. I've watched everything that he has said. I believe he's on the level and he got the briefing. He got read in.
Oh,
So,
he's on the level, all right. That I can assure you of.
yeah. And I had heard that because I follow Ron Pandolfi, who's a big CIA guy that may be briefing the president. And the story I was told by a very good source was that he was briefed when he left the CIA, and Jim talks about this 7-hour briefing where they scared the living
Yeah, you
daylights out of
talked
him.
about it on my show.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. But the thing was that what scared him? If you ask him, get him on the show again, ask him what scared you. Was it the UFO? And he said, no, they didn't discover anything. It was this paranormal stuff. It was this. It shattered his whole re how reality worked. And they said, this is all real. All this psi stuff is real. It's all that we've discovered. You know, we've
Yeah.
discovered and we've developed this stuff. And this is what blew him away. He was just like, because your whole world falls apart when you suddenly realize. You know, that there may not be any time and space, and everything's just a vibration, and there's no color, and all this kind of stuff, and it's all bound together, you know, and it just blow you away that you're, and that's what Jim said. He said, that's why it's indigestible. The subject is indigestible, and it can't be that aliens are visiting from Mars. That's digestible. What's indigestible? What's indigestible is the fact that he said half of the United States population is reading at a grade 6 level, and then he said you're going to drop this stuff on them, that there's no physical world, that it's all waves and all this kind of stuff, and people were just going to go like. They're still in this sort of very religious world where Jesus is going to come back and all this kind of stuff, where it's a very physical world. And that's, I believe, although he's never confirmed it publicly, that's why I believe what blew him away was the fact that the world is not the way you think it is. And that's what they told him is the world is just this weird sort of place. And you have the physical stuff that's happening, but this phenomena is much more than physical. It's playing these games and we have no clue. Even if you take a look at Lukacs, when Lukacs said in his latest book, he talked about the fact that he went to the congressional facility, which means Congress does get briefed. And he said there was a long meeting, but I'll just tell you part of it. And there was a senator there who was Senator Reid. And he said, we've gotten inside the craft. And the latest story that's going around is the craft is so advanced that in 2011, he said, we've got in the craft. And the thing was that it took him until 2011 to get inside the craft because the craft has a mind and it will only let you in if it decides you've got the right attitude. And they couldn't get inside the craft. And then so that's why he said we've got a craft and we've gotten inside it. And that's this idea where they had the craft and they were going to get Bigelow was going to get Lockheed Skunk Works. They were going to get that craft because they couldn't develop anything with it because it has this consciousness interface thing that they couldn't figure out. And they sort of gave up. And if you take a look at Bigelow right now, it confirms that there's really nothing going on because Bigelow was in this for money. He was in this for the technology. And at 2010, you take a look, he's not done anything since 2010, since OSAP shut down. He basically came to conclusion there's no money to be made at this thing. We're not getting anywhere, and I'm going to go back to putting modules on the space station. And he's dropped out.
Go ahead. The truth is that the technological direction that we've tried to go in hasn't been very productive. I think that they have a limited understanding of gravity and an ability to create a field of gravity that's self-generated or generated by a machine. But I think that there is a at least with the Greys, there is an interface between the individual in the ship, flying the ship, and the ship itself. And the ship is a conscious being. And, it's not going to necessarily, this isn't, I'm not talking about technology. I'm talking about something beyond technology here.
Yeah.
We're going to take, go ahead. We're going to take another break
Okay.
just now, our last final break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about disclosure and precedence and what might be going on, because I'm going to be in Washington shortly, and I'm going to be talking about this whole subject with various people there. And I would like to know what your thoughts are. Have presidents been engaged in this? And if they have been, what do they think? And why do they keep the lid on? We'll be right back with Grant Cameron. We're talking to Grant Cameron. His website, presidentialufos.org, his incredible, powerful new books, The Big Game, The Supernatural Unraveling of Ultimate Reality, and The Paranormal, and This Big Game, The Paranormal Blueprint. Do you want to get a handle on all this in your own life? Finally, get some kind of a perspective on who you actually are and where you are. Well, get these books and get into this. Now, Grant, you know a lot about presidents and UFOs. That's where you got your start, really.
Right.
So tell us now, what are your think? I, as I said, I'm going to Washington. There's all kinds of stuff going on, sort of semi behind the scenes and deeper behind the scenes. And believe me, I'm not the guy they're going to take deep behind the scenes because they're all scared that the implant will get pissed off at them. And so, because they all know it's real, and they all therefore know that when they're with me, they're not just with me, and which is the case. Now, what about presence? Obama did not disclose, and who was it? His chief of staff, I believe.
Podesta, yeah.
Yeah, said his great regret was that greatest regret on leaving the White House was that Obama had not disclosed. And years earlier, I heard from Hal Putoff about a plan that was evolved in the George W. Bush White House to disclose, and they didn't do it because it came out that it would cause too much economic disruption, primarily. Now, we have Donald Trump, who seems to be a sort of natural born disruptor. Where are we with disclosure?
I think Obama did disclose as much as he knew. He said, the videos are real and UFOs are real, but we don't really know where they're from. And I think that's what, if you hear all the government statements, they'll always say we have no evidence of extraterrestrial into extraterrestrials being here or extraterrestrial technology. And they're parsing the word because inside Jim Semivan calls them the others. You don't use the word extraterrestrial because we really don't know. And that's what Jim says. We really don't know what we're dealing with here. And I think that's what the disclosure is all about, is the fact that they don't really know. That's what Jim said. He said, I'll bet you a year of my pension that they have not got a clue what's going on. And Eric Walker, who was the highest level source that anybody's ever had, we interviewed him back in 90, 91, and he said, leave it alone. There's nothing you can do about it. Unless you have the mind of Einstein, you're not going to get anywhere. You're up against the windmills. Go and research something else. That's what he told us. And then
Up
he
against
made,
the windmills,
yeah,
like
like you're
Don
trying to fight,
Quixote.
the wind, but wind going the other way. But he kept saying, he said, believe me, leave it alone. There's nothing you can do. And that's this sort of thing that's why I think the cover up is that they really don't know. They know they've got bodies. They got crafts. But Jim Semivan says, just because you got bodies and crafts doesn't mean you know what you're dealing with. And
Yeah, I
this,
agree with that. And they
yeah. And
do
so
have
this is the whole
bodies, they
thing.
do have craft.
It's the stuff they don't know. So if you're a military guy, everything is top secret, and you're not going to give it because you're still trying to figure it out. You haven't figured it out yet, but you're going to figure it out, and you're not going to. It's like a game of cards. You're not going to put your cards on the table and before the Russians put their cards on the table and the Chinese put their cards, because you put your cards on the table and I know this 5% of the story, and the Chinese said, hey, that's the 5% we need. Thank you very much, and we're not going to put our cards down. It's this game that since World War II, it's all. All quantum physics, all reality has been turned into how do we kill people more efficiently? We use, the The atom, the separation of the atom, instead of saving people, we use it to build atomic bombs and stuff. We've turned it into this materialistic world where we're building cell phones and it's all about material things. And that's what's dominating. But if you take a look at the bottom line, it's going to be the Jimmy Carter said when he was asked. He said there are many possibilities, but nobody has answers. Obama said that we really don't know. Bush's vice president, Quayle, said we worked on it intensely and we couldn't figure out anything. So this is what I think the cover-up is all about, is this idea where James Ryder was going to give the craft from Lockheed Skunk Works to Obama or to Bigelow because they couldn't figure out anything, and they had to pay all the security to keep this thing at Lockheed Skunk Works. They didn't want to pay the security anymore, and they were going to give it to Bigelow to put money in it and try to figure it out, and then it was blocked by the Air Force and the CIA. But that's the whole thing, where Bigelow walked away because they really can't figure this thing out. There's this consciousness interface that they haven't figured out. And when I talk to two high-level officials, so you know Tim Taylor is the high-level official, and I had my encounter with him where he starts showing me these photographs of the Hughes aircraft building that has been rebuilt into an office building outside of LAX. And he keeps saying, "What do you think about this? What do you?" And these two guys flying through on this painting, they're flying through space. One guy's old, one guy's young. He said, "What do you think about this? What do you think of this?" And I said, "Tim, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what these paintings are all about or what this is." He said, "It's a Hughes aircraft building." I said, "Well, what's that?" "I don't know what that is." He said, "That's where they had the time travel thing, moving guys to Mars." I said, "Really?" And I went and I photographed, and sure enough, these paintings are in there. And he said, "You know where this one painting with these two guys are flying? You know where it is?" And I said, "No." He said, "It's right outside the elevator." I said, "It's right outside the elevator?" And then I'm thinking, like, and a couple of years later, I'm saying, "Why would Tim Taylor show me those photographs? What was he doing? He didn't say this is for real, but he showed me this photo. What do you think?" And same thing with Ron Pandolfi gets caught on camera one time talking about UFOs. He's on a cruise ship going through the Panama Canal. His wife says, "So, Footman," that's his code name, "Footman, what do you think?" And he said, "There's been a breakthrough. Everybody's wondered what it's like to go into the next world. The next time John Sillison goes to the desert, a number of us here are going to go into the next world and come back again," which gives the impression, same as the one with Tim Taylor, is that this phenomena has to do with popping in and popping out. Like when you take the ship, you can go from the East Coast to Denver in seconds. And that's what
I did
people
that.
describing the ship say. That people will say, there's two definite people that flew the ship. They said, "Where do you want to go?" The one guy said, "I'd like to see the Milky Way from a distance." And they said to a quote, "Ron, it is within you. Go within yourself. When you can imagine it, then we'll go there." He's sitting, he's got his hands on the end of this chair. He said, instantaneously, the window opened and there was the Milky Way off in a distance. And the other one was told the same thing. When you can imagine it, push the button. But you have to put it's inside you. And that's this whole thing. Is there any out there? That's what Semivan says. There does not appear to be any there. And I keep saying to people, what is Jim referring to when he says that? That means something. And it's this idea that what you see out there is not necessarily what's actually going on, that you've got to go back to reality and see that consciousness is primary, matter is second, and then things start to make sense.
Now, folks, I hope you listened to this, and I hope you turn it back if you didn't listen carefully and listen to this last statement very carefully. He is talking about something absolutely real. I have done this. I have been in other worlds physically by doing this. And I know it sounds extraordinary, but one of the first things Anne said after she died to me was that the Greys, I asked her who they were, and she said they are inward beings. They live on the inside of the reality that we are on the surface of. You can go in there. Now, I want to ask you a question. When you published UFO Sky Pilots, I thought to myself, I wonder if he is going to follow up with a book about journeys to other worlds, because I am not the only close encounter witness who has experienced this. Many of us have. And I challenge you, get cracking and get out there
That's a good
and
idea.
find the witnesses who have gone to other worlds and let them speak.
Yeah, that's fascinating because I did talk the first woman that ever showed me flying the craft. I thought she was crazy because she was in her 70s. And that's the one that said, oh, I've flown three different models. I'm going, you flew the craft? Are you kidding me? And she talked about this, the Crystal City, where her favorite place to go in the universe when she flew the craft was to the Crystal City. And it's a
I've been there.
huge, huge thing. And people walking upside down, and it's all made out of crystal and stuff like that. And I've heard a couple of people talk about the Crystal City. So that's a good idea, is to go to that thing, because they are going to some sort of physical place. It, the thing is, how do you get there? This thing where we've sort of locked ourselves into, as they said, you know, the idea that there's out there. Or I talked to these two beings in England who wanted to be interviewed, and I said, sure, I'll interview them. So I'm through going through the woman who's channeling them, and then I said, so I, of course I asked them, so are you extraterrestrial? And they said, would you like us to be extraterrestrial? We could actually do that if you want. We could be extraterrestrials. We could take you to our planet if you want. But no, we're not extraterrestrials. We've always been here. You're the visitor. And I went, whoa. And you hear this over and over again. We've always been here. This idea that they may be right here, right now, and that the reality may be the size of a pin, and you have to just learn how to get in there, into that reality, how to pop into that reality and create it. Or the idea that the ship is bigger on the inside than outside. And the idea, she told me that they have ships that are the size of the solar system, and you can actually make them into like a ball, that you go inside the ball and inside is the whole solar system. And that's been confirmed by Hal Puthoff, that the craft is bigger on the inside than it is outside. It's Chris Bledsoe told me it's 30 feet on the outside, and you went inside, it was the size of a football stadium. And that's the
Yeah,
whole
I've had
thing. They
that
can make
experience
these
too.
worlds appear. They can make it as big as they want. They can put whatever they want in it, but it's all made out of consciousness. They know how to make these worlds, and they're very, very physical worlds, but they're made still made out of consciousness.
You know something fascinating that happened to me? I don't think I've ever talked about it because it's relevant here, but it's not something that seemed huge at the time. In a conversation, probably back in the 90s, I asked, or no, I it's not that I asked. I found myself able to to leave reality. That was it. And I was outside of the whole of reality. And I heard someone very gently voice say, "You shouldn't do this, because if you stay here long, you will forget it." And I thought, this is dying, isn't it? This is forgetting this reality, getting out of it and forgetting. And I thought, I don't want to forget. I'm doing something here worth doing. I don't want to forget. Where are we, though? My goodness. And when someone like Villas-Boas goes into a ship, or I go into a ship, or the UFO sky pilots have their memories, or the bodies at Fort Detrick are autopsied by biologists, and that all happened. Or my uncle sticks his head into the remains of the Roswell craft at Wright Field in 1947. All that happened. That's the physical side of it. That's inside reality. But I'm going to leave you folks with this question. And I'm going to let Grant pontificated on about it in the last 2 minutes or so we've got. Where are we, Grant?
Where are we?
Where are we?
I think we're on the verge. I think we're on the verge of unraveling this thing. It's like the one expression is, if you stand long enough beside a river, you'll see all the bodies of the skeptics float by. As Max Planck says, science does not advance by you convincing your opponent that you're right by evidence. It advances when people die. And it's one funeral at a time. The new generation is not offended with the idea. I think we're on the verge of understanding now, with quantum physics and all this kind of stuff, that the world is this world that is not as physical as we think. I think we're making headway, and I think you and I, that's why it's called the Super Bowl, that most people live lives of quiet desperation. They don't even think about these problems until somebody says you got 3 months to live, and then suddenly they're scrambling trying to figure out what the world is all about. You and I have spent our entire lives trying to figure out, where did we come from? Where are we going? What's actually going on? What's this whole thing about? And so we are the leaders in moving this consciousness along, and it's an indefinite world, or like an infinite world. So it doesn't really matter whether we figure it out now or or 1,000 years from now, it's what did we contribute to this thing? And I think you and I have contributed a lot in terms of moving the ship to go in the right direction. And
Yeah, we're building a spaceship, folks.
I think we're on the verge, but it's very slow because people don't like this consciousness spirituality type thing that there may be everybody's into the physical thing. Give me the crafts. How does this thing? How do I get a free energy and stuff like that? Everybody's into this materialistic world, which is sort of collapsing on itself, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to move this world and say it's not the world you think it is. It's everything is one. Everything's connected, and whatever you do to the world, you do or to other people, you do to the world, and we're like cells inside the body, and the body's inside the cells of the universe, and it's all connected, it's all one thing. And I think that's gradually coming out in terms of understanding in the last since quantum physics started, for sure, that people you can now you can go to Google it and say what is primary? Is it consciousness? Is it fields? Is it particles? And every AI will tell you no, it's not particles. That's secondary. So something is behind
Right.
particles. Something forms the physical world, and we're doing it through our thought. We can move this energy into physical stuff. And I just feel honored to be with you and others that I've known that I got to play part of this game. That I wasn't one of the people who lived a life of quiet desperation. That you actually feel that you contributed something to the world,
Yeah,
and
and so are all the listeners here. I mean, we're the people at the leading edge. Grant Cameron, the big game. Contact modalities, UFO sky pilots, an incredible body of work, amazing stuff, absolutely incredible. He's written about Mount Shasta, which is one of the most mysterious places in the United States and in the world. And beyond managing magic, all kinds of things. This guy is on the edge and he knows how to balance there. Wow, such a privilege to have you back on the show, Grant. Thank you so much for being with us.
thank you.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of unknowncountry.com is Anne Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.